Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Well, you know, I don't really have an opinion about whether he's a, quote, punk, because I leave the punking to you, Ian.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to your fifth favorite, your fourth favorite, your 19th, your favorite hour of fantasy baseball content. It's Under the Radar, part of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Network. I'm Ian Khan, doing a poor Nando DeFino impression. Nando is still on vacation, but with me, as always, your friend and mine, Derek Van Riper.
Hey, glad to be here. Glad to be back from a vacation. And I should say, if we're channeling Nando, we love Topps because Under the Radar is presented by Topps. So check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. We would do that anyway because we love Topps.
Yes, we do. And joining us today, for the very first time, someone who it was, for me, the no question first guest that I, for when I'm on the show, that we've ever had. And who was unquestionably the one that I called first. Welcome to the show, Glenn Colton.
Thank you, my friend. I am very, very honored to sit here and attempt to do the impossible, and that is to sit in for the great Nando DeFino.
No. I mean, I got to tell you, Glenn, I remember when we started this show, I think it was about 3 years ago, you said to me, you said, "That the show's great. I love the show. When am I going to be a guest?" Right?
And it's a true story.
And it sort of has, been a part of our show. And we would talk about it. And it was always like, you know, if we're going to have someone join us in the booth, who's it going to be? And it was like, Glenn. It's going to be Glenn. And we just, the idea of doing a four-man booth never worked. But so there was one other time where I wasn't there. It was a quick show. And we were very lucky that Mike the Mouth stepped in. But here, I called you. I was like, hey, as soon as I found out that Nando was going to be away for a little bit, first guy, Hall of Famer in the fantasy baseball world, Glenn Colton from Colton and the Wolfman, from the show on Sirius XM, Tuesday nights at 10. A great listen and a part of, I've been on that show many, many times, and it's always an honor. So, Glenn, again, welcome to the show. And you want to just tell us a little bit of how you got started quickly, just a quick start and how you got started in the fantasy baseball world.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've been playing fantasy baseball since 1988, which I think is before both of you were born.
And no. Almost. Not me.
Yeah. It was fascinating. A draft 2 weeks after the season started, and we couldn't agree whether we play American League or National League. So the league talent pool was the old Eastern divisions of the AL and the NL. Back when you couldn't get West Coast box scores so easily, there was no internet. And that league is still going today, wow. Which is really a lot of fun. My adult son now plays in that league, so that's a lot of fun. And, I know Rick Wolf, who's one of the major, players in the fantasy business. There would be no, industry without Rick Wolf, and he's a good friend from college. And he was playing in the labor leagues for a number of years. And for me, labor was the holy grail. You read John Hunt's column, you follow Greg Ambrosius and Irwin and Lenny and all the Ron Chandler and all these great players. And Rick calls me one day in the winter of 2002 and says, "Hey, I think if we play in labor together, we can win." And I'm like, "Wait, the labor? Like this league? I'm in. I'm totally in." So we ended up going down to, at that time, USA Today headquarters in Virginia, drafted against the best of the best. It was a little humbling for me as at one point the auctioneer, as we called it at the time, said, "Okay, $27 to Colton." And everyone at once said, "Who?" The good news is we ended up winning that league running away. We caught Alfonso Soriano's breakout, among other things, and then ended up winning again. The next year we played in Labor AL and we became a thing because it's very hard to play as partners. And then Roto World asked me to start writing, and Rick and I started getting more invitations to industry events. And you know, five labor titles later, we never beat DVR in the NL, but we've done pretty well in the AL, and we're still trying to hone that smart system and get even better.
Yeah. Do you want to share with us real quick your smart system? I'm sure many of our listeners have heard it before, because I'm sure you've heard Glenn and Rick either on their show and other shows talk about the smart system, but it's really, I mean, there's just one, it's smart. So why don't you share real quick?
Appreciate that. So one of the things we thought is we needed a fairly simple set of rules and procedures, because we don't study players all day long, every day. We have other jobs, as a lot of our listeners or readers have. So we developed some basic rules, the smart system, and then the rules of engagement. And the smart system is just basic concepts to keep in mind when you are drafting or doing a salary cap bidding. S in smart stands for scarcity. It doesn't mean overpay for scarce positions, but it means put some extra draft capital into the scarce positions so you don't.
We fight for that scarcity every year in every league. You and I, we are two teams.
Totally true.
Always fighting. Totally true.
Totally true. And M stands for management. That's, you really have to carefully manage your draft and your in-season trades, bids, cuts, etc. A stands for anchor. You need at least one starter who is going to give you stats you can count on and build your staff around. It doesn't have to be Jacob DeGrom. It doesn't have to be the top pitcher in baseball, but it has to be a very good pitcher you can count on. For many years, that was Mike Mussina for us, though of course there were others. R stands for reliever, which means get yourself one guy who's going to get you the saves. Every time we fail to get at least one solid closer, it turns out to be overwhelmingly a problem. And the T stands for team. And the theory of that is guys on better teams score more runs, get more opportunities to knock in runs, see more fastballs with guys on base. And the pitchers obviously have a better chance to get wins and saves on better teams. And the closer on a good team rarely becomes the setup man on another team. Closer on a bad team becomes the setup man on a good team come trade deadline. So those are basically the concepts of the smart system. And we added some more things, the rules of engagement. And the basic goof was we had these rules, and every time we would violate it, one of us would say to the other from Top Gun, never, ever leave your wingman. And it all became rules of engagement and a Top Gun theme, and basically ruling out a whole lot of players that are just not our type of players, guys coming off of injury, overhyped rookies who have no record of success, et cetera, et cetera. So we can actually cross off half the player pool, not because we'd never roster them, but because we'd never get them because someone we know will go higher either on the draft board or in the auction price.
How have you found over time, obviously that helps, like just having that rapport and figuring out each other's strengths and weaknesses, that's obviously something that you can't really push fast forward on that if you're starting a partnership with someone. But what have you learned that you wish you knew sooner about sharing a team?
So I'll give you two things, which we've completely embraced, you know, in year, you know, almost 30, you know, of doing this. But number one, do not keep score. Once you make a decision to draft a player, cut a player, trade a player, it is a team decision. That's where sort of the goof "no I" and team comes from. You know, we say that all the time, because if you're going to say, I told you this guy was no good, and I told you we should have drafted that guy, the partnership's going to end. It's going to end in a roto-vorce or a roto-divorce, and that's not pretty. And the other thing is just dramatic preparation. You can get away in a slow draft with not being fully vetted on what your strategy is because you have 4 hours to talk about it. But in a bidding situation or an NFBC type style where you have 1 minute or a minute and a half to make your pick, you have to have vetted every player together, know where you stand on the player, know what your value is on the player, and also know what your budget, your strategy is. So that way, you know, one of the two of you, and it doesn't matter who, can execute because you've already decided what to do, and you don't have any of this last minute debate, because you do 3-4 months of preparation and you're going to roll the dice on 30 seconds of decision making. That's not a prescription for success.
I'll tell you though, I have taken on partners in so many leagues. It's so much fun. I really do recommend it. I mean, if you have a partner in a league, not only do you lift your abilities, I think, in the league largely, right? But what you also do is you have someone who you can figure it out with together. And it's just so much fun. And also at the GDD auctions through the years, because that's where we first met. I'll never forget when we first met. You know, Glenn is typically running the auction and Rick is watching. He's keeping watching everybody. He's watching the expressions on people's faces, the body language. Like, oh, he's going to get out soon. You can keep pushing him. Or you can raise him up a little bit more. I think it's a real advantage. Though I find with partners, I typically like to do the auction on my own with that full preparation. But you know, having partners like Robert Mershak, Cushing. I mean, I have Steve Gardner, Wilson. I mean, I have partners almost everywhere now, except in the industry leagues. And it's just fun. It just adds to the enjoyment. So, and you guys are the best. I mean, you are the best partnership in fantasy baseball. It's not even close. And I mean, you guys, your record is unmatched. And that's why you're in the Hall of Fame. And Rick won the Lauren Michaels Award this year, which I thought was very, very appropriate for all that he's given. I mean, he's a good man. I mean, he's just a good, kind, thoughtful man who does good things for the world. So it's a real tip of the cap. I kind of wish we should have Rick too, but again, three-man booth. But so yeah, thank you for sharing that with us on the partnership, and thanks for joining. First thing I wanted to talk about, and we're all going to just kind of throw ideas out because Nando's not here. We miss you, Nando. We'll see you soon. First guy I want to talk about is Cedric Mullins III. What do you think of Cedric Mullins III DVR? I mean, do you think it's for real and it's gonna continue this way, or do you got to trade him now?
I think it's actually pretty real because it's a good park to be in. He gave up switch hitting, and there's a track record of a guy that puts a lot of balls in play, takes a decent number of walks, and he's shown power at multiple levels, not necessarily game-changing power like we're seeing right now where he might hit 25 home runs this year, but this didn't come out of nowhere, and I think the thing that I really missed on back during draft season was that he gave up switch hitting. That changes everything. If you have plate appearances from one side that are considerably worse than what you're doing on the other, the overall numbers at every single stop aren't going to look as good as they should. And his numbers weren't bad, even with what he was doing from the right side of the plate factored in over the years. So That's just bad research on my part, I guess, not having that in there. And there was opportunity in the Orioles outfield. Like we talked about it a lot back during draft season. There were probably four or five different guys vying for those three spots. We weren't quite sure how they're going to handle first base and DH. But Mullins looked like he had a better chance than not to at least open the year with a big side platoon role, if not an everyday role. So I'm generally a believer here. Projections like him, too. I mean, can you believe this, guys? Projections have him getting 10 more homers, stealing 12 more bases. That puts him right in the mix for a 2020 season when it's all said and done. Glenn, was Mullins someone you were on back during draft season?
You know, yes, for sort of late, but only in the AL onlys, right? I'm not going to say that we were on him in your 15-teamers and certainly not your 12-teamers. But this is, to me, I hear Ian Kahn in my head when it comes to a guy like this. There was nothing really in the advanced metrics that said, you know, get Cedric the Entertainer here. But I always have Ian in my head on the soft data. And that's exactly, DBR, you mentioned it. It was the giving up the switch hitting. And switch hitting is much harder than people realize. Your timing can get off on either side of the plate, and it screws you up completely. You have to take twice as much BP. You have to study twice as much, you know, film. It is really twice as much work. So when you're failing on side of the plate, it really gets to you. So we were on him as a late pick. We have him in the Tout Wars AL, which is really obviously helping our team. But I'll tell you, the one thing that, you know, people are looking at, he hits the ball, he's hitting the ball harder, he's, you know, chasing outside the zone more often, less often, all these positive things. But the one thing I picked up, he is hitting so many fewer infield flies. Last 2 years, the number was in the 20s for the infield fly ball percentage. Now it's under 6. And infield pop-ups are the same as strikeouts. They're absolute outs. They have no chance really of turning into anything. And he's improved that number dramatically, which even gives me more confidence. I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that's so surprising is his average, right? I mean, where I was grabbing him was for the steals. But he's hitting 322. And in an average league, a 322 average this season is kind of a game changer for your team. I was very high on him coming in, but not this high. I mean, this weekend, that's why I had to put him at the top, is that the weekend, I mean, 5 for 5 on Saturday with 2 home runs, 5 for 5. And then on Sunday, so I'm watching, and you know, I watch the box scores very closely during the games. Like, I'm constantly watching, and I see he hits a home run his first time up on Sunday. Then he triples. And then he gets up again, his third at bat, and I notice, oh, there's one out. I was like, oh, they finally got Mullins out. Turns out he hit a shot into right center field and gets thrown out at third. So he's 3 for 3 on Sunday. And I'm just like, wow, that is a game changer for a team. And he's just been fantastic. And you know, you can't expect this, but I mean, we're talking about 25, I think it's 25-25 at this point. I mean, 25-25, and he's, you know, he's got to be a top 25 player, and that is not expected. So it's just Cedric Mullins has just been an absolute shock. And another guy who I've kind of been on over the course of the last couple of years, kind of just waiting, because he's got the pedigree. He's got the brother in Bradley, in Kyle Zimmer. And then Bradley Zimmer, you know, you're thinking that this could be the year. Center field is wide open. Mercado is kind of not going to be a factor. He's going to get the center field time. And he comes up, Bradley Zimmer, for the Indians. Like, I'm kind of in on that. In AL only this past week in labor, I was trying to figure out what the bid was. And I started out at 5. Then he stole 2 bases in 1 game. And I popped it up to 7. And then Dave Adler came in at 9, which was disappointing because Billy Hamilton, unfortunately, got injured. And by the way, on the switch hitting, what if Billy Hamilton did the same thing as Cedric Mullins and just hit from the right side of the plate? Would that make some sense? Because from the right side, he's got power. I mean, power is relative.
little P power.
little man power. He's got like little Grogu from The Mandalorian power. He's like Baby Yoda power. But from the left side, he really struggles. Maybe Billy Hamilton should do a little Cedric Mullins the third. But back to Bradley Zimmer. Glenn, do you think that Bradley Zimmer could be an asset? I do. Do you think he could be an asset? Certainly in AL only, but even in 15-team leagues?
You know, I'm not in. I get the pedigree, but people are still all excited. He stole, you know, 18 bases in 2017, 300 some odd plate appearances. 2017, you know, many years ago at this point. I mean, I was really looking when I got the rundown, saying, let me look for some positives here. You know, the last time he got 100 plate appearances at a level and hit 300? High A in 2015. High A in 2015 is the last time he hit, you know, for that kind of average. And he was only hitting 260 in Colorado Springs, which, you know, doesn't move me. And the other thing that worries me is you're looking at guys currently, I know it's a very small sample size with a batting average barely over the Mendoza line, despite a BABIP way over 400. Not a lot of positive signs I'm seeing, but maybe DVR will be rosier.
Well, I think with Zimmer, he has played fewer games in the last 4 seasons than he played in his first year with Cleveland. I mean, that's amazing. That's how hurt this guy has been over the years. So the way I look at him, I see a guy that's always had a lot of swing and miss since he got to the upper levels of the minor leagues. Once you get to double A, he was striking out at least 25% of the time. Triple A and above, usually closer to 30%. So he's always going to strike out a lot. Even if he strikes out 35% of the time, they don't have a lot of great options to replace him. He has to walk, and he has to be very lucky on balls in play, which, given his speed and given some of the power that he has, is not impossible. I think he has to walk a really fine line, though, to keep that playing time. So I think I'm more on Glenn's side here, where I did pick him up in tout, just chasing speed. I think it's more of a desperation sort of play, and if I reserve him or drop him on Sunday, I wouldn't be all that surprised, because it's a very fringy skill set for me.
I agree. I agree with all of that. And if he were somehow to be able to put it together, and you're running and you're having challenges in the speed metric, right? I just think there's upside here. You know, this is under the radar play. It's the show's under the radar. This is what we do, is we find the guys who people aren't really, you know, buying into fully. It's the kind of guy that he could have the job if he has a couple of hot weeks in Cleveland. Because, I mean, I just think that there's possible upside. He's worth a pickup. Certainly in AL only, he should be a target for people. But even in 15-team leagues, I think he's a pickup and stash on the bench. Maybe it comes together. Again, 15% chance. But if that comes together, that'll bring you some speed, and speed really matters. Another guy from Cleveland who came up this week and who Larry Schechter broke the bank for was Bobby Bradley, another sort of top fringy top 100 prospect from first base. You know, we've been talking about Bobby Bradley for years in the prospect world. Now, here he comes up. He's got tons of power and tons of swing and miss. But and I sort of just added him to the list right now because I was thinking, I was like, oh, yeah, Indians, Bobby Bradley. So DVR, what do you think of Bobby Bradley? Do you think that this he could stick? I mean, and our man, Jake Bowers, that was so sad, that text that you sent to me and Nando saying Jake Bowers has just been basically released. Do you think that Bobby Bradley steps into that space and holds the job for the rest of the season?
I think it's the same problem they have in their outfield where they don't really have a better option right now. Bradley was pretty good at AAA a couple years ago, and it wasn't at a level where you said, oh, he's going to come up and he's definitely going to hit for all of that power in the big leagues with a passable batting average. He struck out 33.8% of the time while hitting 33 home runs in the year of the rabbit ball in 2019. So I think he's feast or famine. I think he's 4 weeks to possibly keep the job. And if he strikes out too much, he gets DFA'd too, or he gets sent back down.
He gets sent back down.
He won't get DFA'd. Like, you're looking at kind of a Daniel Vogelbach sort of skill set.
Yep, I think that's right.
When he runs hot, he plays. When he doesn't run hot, he sits. And he's probably a big side platoon guy too. So you're looking at like a 75% playing time share as opposed to someone who's going to be an everyday player.
With Yu Chang, who actually hit a home run this past weekend, which was really a surprise. Glenn, Bobby Bradley, what do you think?
You know, look, obviously, if you're playing in an AL only or you're in a 15-team mixed league with a lot of injuries, it's a guy you have to look at. But when I look at a guy who's never, leaving aside rookie ball in 2014, never hit 270 even in any of the sort of great places to hit that he's been in Colorado, among others, that worries me. It sort of ties in with the strikeout rate that DBR is talking about. I think this is a guy who could easily, you know, be hitting 160 and striking out 40% of the time and end up back in the minor leagues. And if I'm Cleveland, I'm just waiting for Andrés Giménez and Ahmed Rosario to play up to their prospect pedigree, because those are the guys they really need, you know, to give more opportunities to.
Yeah, but they got to find somebody to play first base. And the problem is that Rosario is starting to do it. Rosario has had a really good week this week. He was ranked number 107 for the past week, which is fine. You know, if you bought Ahmed Rosario, he had two home runs this week. He stole a base this week. He hit, I think, like 267. And he played every day at shortstop. So Ahmed Rosario looks like he settled in. And Cesar Hernandez, did you guys see how many home runs that guy hit this weekend? I think he hit like three. I mean, he was just hitting home runs.
It was
surprising. Certainly very, very surprising.
But let me challenge that, though. Why wouldn't you play Naylor? I mean, I know Naylor looked like Bill Buckner on a play earlier this year in Cincinnati, but why wouldn't you play Naylor at first base? And you know, then you have Rosario and Harold Ramirez, who's looked pretty good. And, you know, give Owen Miller a shot to play every day in one position, or give Bradley Zimmer a chance to play every day, and just play Naylor at first base instead of, you know, assuming Bradley flames out.
You know, okay, if Bobby Bradley does flame out, that makes some sense. He did look like Buckner.
It was
at
awful.
First base. I remember. Oh, that was really, and they literally lost the game. Like, that was a game loser.
Yep.
They were going to win the game, ground ball to first base. He just boots it, and then they end up losing the game right after. I mean, that's just, it's hard to put a guy back there when your record goes either 11-9 and then it's 10-10.
It was kind of my fault, though. I turned on the game in the ninth inning just to watch Class A pitch because I hadn't seen him actually pitch live in a while. And then I kind of take responsibility for that because I turned it on and jinxed him.
I think that's right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, Everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
But part of your smart system is that you don't like getting players who are in, which I'm in full agreement with. We've discussed this before. You don't like when a player goes to a new team. That you avoid those guys in the beginning of the season drafts, right? That's part of the smart system.
For big money or sort of big pressure situations, not, you know, the low budget.
Not an $8 million, right.
Yeah.
But for the big stuff, you think that there's going to be an adjustment period emotionally, right? And we've talked about this on the show. Okay, I want to connect that to me is the same thing when a guy goes and plays another position. So like Andrew Vaughn, he's been fine. And DVR loves Andrew Vaughn. He's been fine. But if Andrew Vaughn was playing first base this whole season, which he's not going to do with Abreu there, but if he was, he wouldn't be spending half of his brain power and emotional power on how do I play left field, right? So he could just focus on playing baseball. He doesn't have to think. He just has to play. For me, the difference for Ahmed Rosario is the fact that he's not playing center field anymore, that he doesn't have to think on the field. He just has to play. So to me, just keep Rosario just where he is. Leave him at shortstop. Don't mess around with him. Put Zimmer in center field, Naylor in right. If Bradley does flame out, then you can put Bill Buckner back at first base. Put Bill Naylor back at first base, we can call him. But otherwise, like, just keep guys in their positions. I think it's really challenging once you start switching positions around. DVR, what do you think about that?
I'd much rather see a player play the position, at least in spring training, but hopefully in the minors at some point, rather than have to learn it for the very first time in big league games. And I think for the Vaughn situation in particular, it is really difficult because he's facing big league pitching for the first time. For Rosario, he's been in the big leagues for a few years, so I don't see it as quite as much of an ask on a player like that. So I think if I were going to steer clear of a hitter, if I were going to put a rule together for when to avoid a situation like this, it would be with a younger hitter. It would be a player like Vaughn. And that came on pretty late in draft season since Eloy got hurt in a spring training game and their plans changed pretty quickly, right? If Eloy never got hurt, it'd be Abreu and Vaughn at first base and DH, and we might not have ever seen the Yerminator.
That's true. Glenn, what do you think about this?
So I agree with both of you, but I would add one sort of additional point to it, which is the player trying to quickly learn or relearn or be moved to a much more challenging position? And I'm looking at you, Eugenio Suarez. If I knew that they were going to move him to shortstop, I assure you the draft price at Labor NL would have been a much lower than we ended up shelling out.
Yep, that's a major. It changes the experience for the player. And Eugenio Suarez is a perfect example of a guy. But I still think watching Ahmed Rosario struggle with fly balls in center field.
You know, it's like Timmy Lucas.
Man, you just put yourself in 1964. I wanted to talk a little bit. I'm going to hold off on the flexing conversation. You know, we had two major players get sent down to the minors this week, yesterday. Keston Hiura and Jared Kelenic. Glenn, what did you think of that?
Yeah, I think it had to be done, right? I mean, for the benefit of the both players' attempt to develop. I mean, you know, Kelenic, I think, look, Barry Bonds struggled in his first try. Mike Trout struggled in his first try. You're not going to give up on these guys, but it's not really surprising to see somebody that hyped be disappointing. He will be fine. He'll be back and he'll be fine. Keston Hiura, I have no idea what to make of him. And even if I didn't have the great honor of sitting in the booth with you guys, I would have listened and waited to hear what DVR had to say about Hiura, because I think of DVR as the ultimate expert on Keston Hiura.
DVR, I'm honored and I'm bummed that it's a player that I want to root for, but his problems have been pretty consistent going back to the shortened season, where high fastballs are just something he can't catch up to. And breaking balls low and away. It's just two major holes in his game that big league pitching can consistently exploit. And the thing that really struck me, and this is probably because the Brewers didn't have any real viable alternatives the first time they sent Keston Hira to Nashville is that he went down to AAA. He got good results, right? You look at the AAA numbers and they kind of stand out. 9 games, 3 homers, couple steals, hit .438, got on base at a .526 clip. He still was striking out 34.2% of the time. Good players generally don't strike out that much, especially at AAA. Like, you just go back and look at the last 12 years of AAA data, and you've got maybe, I think the one example I came up with for an article was George Springer. When he first got to AAA, moving through the Astros system, had a K rate near 30%. And over time, he became a very different player than the player that we thought we were getting when he entered the league. I don't remember the specific holes that Springer had in his swing back then, if there was certain pitch types or anything similar to Hira, or if it was just a case where maybe he was too aggressive and putting himself in bad counts. But that's like one really good player out of a lot of guys. You look at that list, there's a bunch of like failed prospects on that list. I think this is going to be a long stay for Keston Hira at AAA. Obviously, it's been a brutal year. His mother was diagnosed with cancer, so there's that story. You're just wondering, like, how could he even be focused on baseball right now, given the circumstances? Like, I wondered, though, when we saw these problems last year, I wondered if it had to be corrected over an offseason, and it wasn't corrected over the offseason. So I think it's a total swing rebuild that has to happen if Keston Hira is going to come back and be the guy that could possibly hit 25 or 30 home runs and maybe do it with a good average too, because he still makes a lot of hard contact when he connects, but year over year, the K rate just keeps going up.
You know, the guy I want to talk about is Kelenic. There's a piece of me, he reminds me of like a really hot young actor who's like, I am the stuff. It's me. I'm the greatest actor of all time. Yeah, well, if you think you're the greatest actor of all time and you walk around and you act like that, you're gonna get your wings a little too close to the sun and you're gonna fall. And I was so taken by Kelenic's first home run in AAA. Did you guys see that? The home run that he hit? And as he's running around the bases, he's screaming. Well, I have a helicopter going over our head at my house. He is screaming at the dugout, let's go, let's go. I'm the man, right? And sort of everyone was like, you got to bring him up. He's the greatest player in baseball. Yeah, well, he's really not. And he's really young still. And emotionally, he was not ready for the big stage at all. And they didn't even need to make adjustments to him. Like, typically, you see somebody who comes up and, like, Bedu, right, in Detroit, who was just, like, tore it up for, like, the first 10 days. And then the league's like, yeah, you know, he can't really hit this pitch. Let's do that. They didn't have to do that with Jared Kelenic. Now, here's what I'm going to say. Keston Hira, I joined a team with Steve Gardner. We were talking about this yesterday, and we traded him. I was like, we got to get rid of him. We got to get him off the team. And he still had like the upside. It's like a dynasty league, but it's got contracts. So we traded him straight up pretty much for Aaron Judge before the season. So I wouldn't buy Keston Hira at this point. I'm not interested in Keston Hira. Though, we were talking last week about when Beller was on the show, and big shout out to Beller for stepping in last week. Kelenic, if you want Jared Kelenic, now is the time to go buy him in Dynasty Leagues. Because we're talking about Manoah, and it was like, I said, you can't buy Alek Manoah right now. Like, if you do, you're crazy. Because you can't buy him, because the water's too high here. Like, you got to wait for it to go down, and the water will go down, whether it's by injury or by bad performance. You can't buy him right after his performance against the Yankees. So yeah, then this week, the past week, he gives up 4 runs and three and a third or something like that. Really struggles. It's like, oh, all right, now you can go buy Alek Manoah. Now is the time to buy Jared Kelenic. Would you guys agree with that, DVR?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. In a long-term league, if you have someone willing to trade him to you, they were not going to trade you Jared Kelenic 3-4 weeks ago before he debuted, because they thought they were getting the sun, the moon, and the stars from day one. What's interesting to me, look at the numbers that Dylan Carlson put up in his rookie season a year ago. Played 35 games last year. He struck out more than Kelenic has struck out to this point. He walked less than Kelenic has walked to this point. If you just look at the slump that Kelenic is in, it's easy to say, ah, he's not ready. If you look at some of the underlying numbers, he's got a 109 BABIP, which, how unlucky can you be on balls in play? Like, yeah, there could be some poor contact and stuff in there. Hold on.
There's poor contact on the BABIP there. Sorry, go ahead.
So sure, he's making poor contact. Here's the thing that I don't like about this. Seattle is going absolutely nowhere this season. Mm-hmm. How is he going to solve his problems against big league caliber pitching by facing lesser pitching at AAA that he looked like he was overmatching for the very brief time that he was there. Like, level to level, he's always been one of the very best players in the league.
But you know what? He's a punk, man. He's a bit of a punk from my perspective. I think so.
From 3,000 miles away, you're making that call?
I'm making this call. I'll tell you why I'm making this call. Because and I am not defending the former president of the Seattle Mariners, because he's a triple punk. But basically, Kelenic is saying, I belong in the major leagues right now. And if you're not putting me in the major leagues right now, you're doing it just to hold me down for contract, which is true, but I belong there. So he comes up in the minors, goes crazy for 2-3 weeks, and then comes up to the show. And what is he hitting? What is he doing? He's doing nothing. So if I'm the Seattle Mariners, there's a piece of me that says, you go back down, young man. You go back down and you go through the process. You got our guy fired, who we didn't want to fire, and he deserved to be fired. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he was terrible, what he said, especially about Julio Rodriguez and all that stuff. But to me, I look at Jared Kelenic and I see a me-first player. I don't see a team-first player. That's my opinion. I could be wrong, and people can be mad, and I'm sorry. But that's what I see. And I say, yeah, you go back down, young man, and you go prove it again. Not over a course of 2 weeks. Go down for another 6 weeks. Show us what you have, and then come back up and find that success. Like what Joe Adell is doing. He's down there. He's hitting home runs at a much better rate than he'd ever done it before. And now he's going to come up, and he's going to be ready. I think Kelenic needs a little bit more time in the oven. Glenn, where are you at on this?
Well, you know, I don't really have an opinion about whether he's a, quote, punk, because I leave the punking to you, Ian, your expert in reading these people's personalities. But I will say it feels like, you know, he goes down, gets a little humble pie, maybe Crash Davis, you know, tutors him a little bit.
Yeah, but I like that.
But I also think we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. They might have said to him, look, we're not sending you down for a long time. It's 2 weeks. It's a month. Chill out. Go do some hitting. You're going to be back most of the summer. There might have been an unspoken agreement with him already. I just don't know. But I agree with DVR. At some point, he has to spend the majority of the year in the major leagues taking his lumps, you know, as Crash Davis would say, you know, trying to hit ungodly breaking stuff and figuring it out. And there's no replacement for that time actually in the batter's box against the best of the best. And they need to do it. They need to get that out of the way for him so he can become the player that he should be.
Can I just say, though, about the Mariners? They're right now 30-31, and nobody expected them to be in at that level of winning baseball games at a 500 clip. Before Kelenic came up, they had a winning record, and he has done legitimately nothing but hurt the team in playing. And that's my argument. It's like, if you're going to come up and you're going to demand to come up and say, I'm ready for this, and then not do it, I mean, punk is wrong. Okay, I'm not DVR. I'll take it back. I'll take the punk back. I think I'm frustrated because I made a trade for him in one league and I was waiting for him to sort of, you know, be a spark plug for me. So I think there's a little bit of personal stuff there. So I'll give you that. But if I'm a Seattle Mariners fan, I want to see the team win. They have a chance at the wild card. I know that sounds crazy with the team that they have, but with Kikuchi coming up, with Marco Gonzalez coming back, you know, Justin Dunn pitching well, Sheffield pitching well, it's not good. They had him up at the top of the lineup. He's batting first, 0-4, 0-4, 0-4, 0-4, 0-4, constantly. Then they move him down to fifth. Then they move him down to sixth. Then they move him down to seventh. And it's like, where else? You can't keep moving him. You gotta get some production from that place. And the idea that they've lost Kyle Lewis, I'm happy that Taylor Trammell deserves to be in that center field for me. I think it's fine. I think you should go try to buy him in dynasty leagues. You know, if a team is competing and they have Kelenic as one of their top five, they have other injuries because every team has injuries. You can maybe go get Jared Kelenic for, I don't know, Mitch Haniger plus John Means. Well, Means is hurt, but Mitch Haniger plus a good pitcher in a dynasty league. And that's a good play. So I think that's the opening. I think that his price will never be lower than it is right now.
I'm still struggling with the idea that Justice Sheffield is pitching well, but I don't want to take you too far off the rails.
No,
here.
I mean, Justice Sheffield was available in AL Labor this week.
Yeah, because I cut on him.
Oh, you cut him. When did you cut him?
Before this week's Fab. Yeah.
Yeah, but you didn't want to keep him for the Detroit start? You didn't think?
No, it was the week before that.
It was the week before. Okay. Yeah, because I noticed him on the wire. I was like, wow. God, but, I don't really know, want
4.77, 1.57, limited strikeouts, no wins. Next.
Yeah. I get it. I get you. DVR. So does that make any sense, DVR, to you about what I'm saying about Kelenic and the Mariners? Or is it just like, hey, it's a build year, just build?
I think it's just a build year, just build. I mean, what I'm increasingly believing is that the gap between AAA and the big leagues has never been wider than it is right now. And maybe that's even further widened by the pandemic year and the lost time. Like, hitters are so far behind pitchers because they didn't have the chances last year. They didn't have opportunities to play in games. That's a huge problem for young hitters, especially. So if you're the Mariners, they sent Taylor Trammell down to bring Kelenic up a few weeks ago, right? And then Trammell went down, mashed at AAA, got the K rate down. He deserved to be back. But if we're sitting here right now and we're saying, you know, you should really give that playing time to Jake Fraley if you want to win instead of Kelenic, I think you're wrong. I think you're making a silly argument. I mean, I think both of those players are going to go through some growing pains, but one of them is a much more important part of your future. And like I said before, I don't think you can solve the problems that big league pitchers are going to throw at you by facing a lesser level of competition. It just doesn't happen that way.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And we were talking about pitchers versus hitters and how the pitchers have had such a big advantage. So I'm going to pop down to Gerrit Cole. On the show, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I was so excited because Robert Mrazek and I traded Louis Robert and Spencer Torkelson for Gerrit Cole. And now, Glenn, you're my lawyer in the fantasy baseball world. Like every time I say something where I'm like, I'm not sure I should have said that, I call you and I say, am I going to get sued? And you're like, no, I think you're fine. I think you're fine. So you can stop me here. But there's a moment I had, I think it was last night, where I went, did we just trade for a guy who is sort of somewhat known for altering the baseball? Like the week before baseball is cracking down on this? Because, Glenn, you're a Yankee fan. We're Yankee fans. We see each other at the games. It's super fun. Did you happen to watch Cole's last start last week where he gave up 5 runs in 5 innings?
I didn't. And it's interesting that you say that because the stats don't jump off the page as saying there was a problem. It was just a bad day. But I'm curious what you saw.
Here's what I saw. I saw a guy for the first time who did not look comfortable on the mound. So the first thought I had was, is he hurt? Because that would be bad. That would be bad timing if he's hurt. But then I saw something else. His velocity was down just a little tick, and he just didn't look confident up there. And it was literally the week that MLB started collected baseballs and announced that not only have we collected baseballs, but now we're really collecting baseballs. And if you're caught, you're going to be suspended for 10 games. Now, I'm not going so far as to say there was that article, it was in Sports, I don't remember where it was, where Cole was, it was discussed that Cole had been trying to get something from the Los Angeles Angels trainer. Is that right? Do you remember this, DVR?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the details exactly, but yes.
He was like, I need some of that stuff. I got to have the stuff. Now, I can't confirm that. I don't know that that's true, certainly. But it just did occur to me that if you do have Gerrit Cole, now might be a good time to move him in a dynasty league. Because if maybe also, I mean, I'm not making any accusations. I'm just sort of bringing things together. Like, he went to the Astros. Now, who was it? Was it somebody DVR was you last night who said he was pretty good in his last year in Pittsburgh, but once he went to the Astros, who were sort of known for taking liberties, should we say, with garbage cans and stuff, he became the best pitcher in baseball along with Jacob DeGrom. I mean, Cole and DeGrom to me are the top two guys. Is there anything to this, or am I just being a little too under the radar here, Glenn?
I think you're off base. I wouldn't be too worried about being sued. You didn't accuse him of anything, okay, good. But, you know, you're asking a question of, you know, is this related? I don't know. You're not accusing him, but to me, look, under the absolute microscope that was, you know, the playoffs, either as a pitcher in Houston or a pitcher with the Yankees last year, he was lights out in most of his, you know, outings this year. He's been lights out, and I haven't seen anything that says, wow, and this is just my eyes, right? It's not StatCast, mm-hmm. that says, wow, the drop on the curve is so much more, or the break is so much more. I'm not seeing anything that says there's some, you know, unfortunate addition to the arsenal. So personally, I'm not worried. I think guys have bad outings. You know, he had a bad outing on May 17th, and they're almost identical statistics when he was at Texas. So other than that, though, every other start has been pretty darn good. So personally, I'm not worried.
Okay. DVR, do you have any further thoughts about it?
Eno and Max Bay have worked together on these stuff numbers that we talk about sometimes on Rates and Barrels and Command Plus and some of the stuff that Eno puts alongside his rankings. Gerrit Cole, based on spin and movement and all the factors they look at, has the best stuff score in the entire league right now, right? So if you said there is some kind of sticky substance that Gerrit Cole uses, some kind of extra tacky, whatever, spider tack, whatever it might be that he has that's going to be taken away, is he going to go from that to absolutely nothing that he can use on the ball? Or is it going to be something, you know, like the sunscreen and rosin mixture, whatever is more commonly accepted, right? Is he going to go from the best possible stuff to top 5, top 10, top 15 stuff? I mean, how bad can this decline actually be? Like, I think it's something to be mindful of, but the reason I brought up that Pirates season, it was 2015. It was the middle year in Pittsburgh. He was there for 5 years. He's proven prior to being in Houston that he could be a very good pitcher. The difference, though, is once he got to Houston, the K rate just went through the roof. Like, we were under 25% with the K rate every year with Gerrit Cole from 2013 to 2017. Once he got to Houston, that number shot up 34.5%, 39.9%, 2 years with the Yankees, 32.6% and 36.5%. That's a different pitcher.
Right.
So if we're talking about closer to that strikeout per inning stuff that we saw in Pittsburgh in the AL East, maybe an uptick in home runs too. I think Gerrit Cole's been a little bit lucky with the home run rate to this point, given where he pitches. The correction might be something in the line of maybe like a low threes ERA the rest of the way and a whip just above one with a strikeout per inning. That's still a really good pitcher.
No, still great. Still great. I'm just saying that what was his ERA last year?
284. But here's the thing, Ian. If you're going to take this away from Gerrit Cole, who else on that top of that leaderboard? Joe Musgrove, Jacob DeGrom, Corbin Burns, Bauer, Glasnow, Darvish.
Yeah.
Some of those other guys are going to lose something too.
Absolutely.
100%. It's going to be different for everybody depending on what pitches they throw and what substances they use and what substances are taken away. It's a really difficult thing to try and predict right now given the number of variables in play.
It's true, without question. And it's just something that I noted. It was a look in his eye that was just different. I just saw a guy who, because in every time you watch, what I look for in an ace is I just want to roll him out there and not worry and just enjoy the ride, right, of the evening. Just like, hey, go do your thing. And that's what I traded for in that league was, hey, I could use that. I mean, I've already got great pitching, but let's put this over the top. And I just saw a different look in his eye for the first time. Again, the first thought I had was, is he hurt? Because he looks like he's hurt. He looks uncertain. And he never looks uncertain. He looks like I'm the boss. And so we'll see in his next start. I think it's on, Thursday of this week is his next start. I genuinely hope, both as a fantasy owner and as a Yankee fan, that that was an aberration, that it has nothing to do with any of this, because that will help me both from my fantasy team, but even so also my the team that I that my family roots for. It's just something that clicked in my head, and I was like, we'll see. We'll see. Staying on the Yankees for a minute. DVR, you texted us about Miguel Andujar. You want to share what it was?
Yeah, why doesn't he walk, like, ever?
Glenn, why doesn't he walk ever?
Because he can't stop swinging at pitches out of the strike zone. It's not that complicated. A 40%, you know, chase rate or O-swing rate is terrible. And you know what? That's what the Yankees do. It is so frustrating. It is acceptable to swing and miss by feet instead of inches. It is acceptable. It is okay when Stanton does it. Is it okay? It's okay when Judge does it, when Sanchez does it, on and on. And so what do you expect? They just swing and hope, and there's no surprise that the young player is doing that as well.
What do you think as a Yankee fan watching these Yankees on a nightly basis or almost nightly basis?
It's actually sickening, and it's not sickening because they're not dominating and the Yankee fans are spoiled and they expect that. No. It's because it's a bad brand of baseball, and it has been for years. It used to be they'd hit all these home runs, they'd beat up on Baltimore and Seattle and whatever, and then they'd go and they'd lose to Tampa or Houston or the good pitching. And now this swing for the fences, don't play, you know, really solid fundamental baseball is hurting them. And I'm just pine away for the days of, you know, Jeter and Bernie and you know, all these guys who moved runners, who put runs on the board, because you know what? If they score three or four runs a game, the way they're pitching and the way the bullpen has come together with Loaisiga and Britton coming back,
yes,
they'll win a lot of games, but they don't score. And they don't score because in some ways, they don't want to score four runs. They want to score eight. And most of the time, four with that staff, with Cole and the way, you know, Herman is pitching and Montgomery and Kluber was pitching and Tyone. So it just makes me crazy because it's so easily fixed.
Well, I don't know if it's easily fixed. And I'm going to say something that is maybe unpopular because people like Aaron Boone. I like Aaron Boone. I think he's a very nice man. He's very thoughtful, very kind. I don't think he's a very good manager. And it's not his X's and O's. It's not how he sets his lineup. It's the look in his face. When Kevin Cash is in the other dugout, I just look at the Rays. I go, the Rays are going to win this game. Because Kevin Cash is grounded and expecting good stuff. When Alex Cora is in the dugout for the Boston Red Sox, the advantage that the Red Sox have over the Yankees, to me, is extreme. And at the end of the game on Sunday night, when the Yankees lost it again and Gleyber Torres is just not a shortstop, ESPN, it was on ESPN, and they were asking Xander Bogaerts, why is it that Alex Cora makes such a difference for your team? And Xander Bogaerts sort of smiled and he said, he just makes us believe that we're going to succeed every day. He just makes us think that we can do it. And I'm not taking a shot. I'm not saying that Boone doesn't do that, but he doesn't actively do that. And then in the game, I think it was Sunday, did you see the pitch to Roughneck Odor that was strike three that was 5 inches outside?
It was, I did, and it was an atrocious call that can't happen on national TV. But the fact of the matter is they only had put, you know, a limited number of runs on the board, and it's because they have such a bad command of the strike zone that it is more likely that you're going to get rung up. You remember Wade Boggs never got rung up because the thought was if he didn't swing, it must not be a strike. The Yankees have the exact opposite reputation.
Yeah, but in that moment, then Aaron Boone, so then...
Has to get tossed. He has to get tossed.
There. He had to get tossed in that spot because Phil Nevin got tossed and then the bench coach got tossed. He didn't even say anything. And then Bill Miller comes out. He's the crew chief for that game. And Aaron Boone goes out and basically says, Bill, what's going on? Very mild. And Bill Miller starts walking over to him like he's a dark trooper from Star Wars, like with just big and strong, like standing there, like, you going to mess with me, Aaron? And Aaron's like, no, that's fine. I'll go back to the bench. And I was like, that's not going to win. That's not what you need in that spot. What you needed in that spot was a good old fashioned, my guys are savages in the box moment. And he just doesn't, it's not the kind of guy he is. I mean, he just has a different thing. And I do think managing matters. I think coaching matters. DVR, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was on the rototiller during my vacation, so I didn't get to watch the Yankees as much as I ordinarily would. But didn't Boone get tossed a couple days before?
Yes, he did. Yes.
So I don't know, man. Like, I look at this team. You guys, you've had so much success as Yankees
not
fans.
Lately.
Your bar is just ridiculous. Like I root for a team that's never won a World Series. Like, think about that. Just think about that for a minute. The Yankees have had a lot of continuity over the last 5 years in terms of hitting coach and a lot of the core pieces in that offense. Get some secondary guys that come and go, and obviously injuries force them to rely on depth a lot. But since 2017, they have the second best offense in the league, 11% better than league average. They don't strike out at an above league average clip. They do a ton of damage because they have a lot of power, and the park boosts that up too. But I don't know why it's going so wrong for them right now. But I also don't think this. I'm still not ready to say the sky is falling on this team. And I wonder with a guy like Andujar. Does he press because it is so hard for him to stay on this roster? Is he just trying to make something happen, to do everything he possibly can to actually stick? Because he's kind of become the new Clint Frazier. Like, for the last couple of years, Frazier was the up-and-down guy in the outfield. Now Andujar is that extra guy. Like, maybe we never see 2018 again from him, but that happened, and that was really good. And he wasn't reaching at pitches as much back then. So I think he's one of those guys that has nothing left to prove at AAA, doesn't have a regular spot really carved out, and he's not necessarily doing himself any favors with the chances he's getting right now.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think for every Javi Baez who swings at everything and just has so much talent that he's a huge success in the major leagues, there are 15 or 20 guys that try it and fail. And maybe Andujar could be the second one, but when he actually swings at a pitch in the zone, it's a 90% zone contact rate. So all he has to do is commit himself, it seems to me, to watching film, picking up the ball, laying off the pitches out of the strike zone, because when he does swing in the zone, he kills it.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he hits the ball really hard, too, when he hits the ball. But in OBP leagues, actually, you kind of can't start Miguel Andujar. I mean, he's never, ever going to walk. He sort of becomes a useless player for you, doesn't he?
You have Mike Trout, you can start him.
Yeah. It's the same as having a guy that hits 205, right? Like, if you can build around Joey Gallo in a league that uses average because you put a DJ LeMahieu counterweight on the same roster,
yeah,
then
you could
get an OBP machine and you can afford one hit in the category. I think Andujar, like a lot of guys that don't walk much, like I'd say he walks 4-5% of the time over the course of the year. Walked 4.1% of the time when he was good. If he gets back to that and he's striking out less than 20% of the time, the average is probably good, like 260, 270. OBP is going to come in around 310. You can live with that. You can have one or two guys in your lineup that are below your OBP average if you get above average power and run production, which he would with regular opportunities in that lineup. So I see him as more of a trade piece for them, though. I just don't.
Yeah, I think you're right.
If you're a team that's going to flip something to the Yankees and you want a major league ready position player, whether you want to play him back at third base, you want to try him at first, whatever you want to do, I don't care. Your rebuilding team, try something. He fits better on a team that can just let him play.
What about to the Pittsburgh Pirates for Adam Frazier? Because Adam Frazier, he's hitting .338. He's got a .394 OBP. He plays second base. Rougned Odor is just not a great baseball player.
I don't know why the Yankees have him. I honestly didn't understand it at the time, and I still don't get it.
It was a Jay Bruce. They were thinking, we'll put Odor there, maybe with the short right field fence. He can make something happen. He can get on a roll. We put LeMahieu at first, and we'll cover that spot. Now they got Chris Gittens up. Go ahead.
But it was a free shot, right? I mean, they do this all the time. They try to take a free shot, and all of a sudden, you know, they take these guys, that Luke Voit, for example, who they got for, you know, nothing, and it became a player, and you know, decades ago, Scott Brosius, who they got for nothing, became a different player. So they took a free shot. Gio, yeah, they took a free shot. Now, are they going to stick with him?
That's the question.
Nah, I don't think so.
It's good to take the free shot, but if the shot misses, move on. And, you know, Andujar for Frazier, I'm curious to see what Frazier would do in Yankee Stadium. And as your everyday starting second baseman, at the end of the day, you could also make an argument that they could make a trade. How about this? Make a trade for Trevor Story and then move Torres back to second base.
I'm in.
I like that better than Adam Frazier. Put together a package of minor league guys. They still have a very deep system. Send them over to Trevor Story and get him on the team. What do you think of that?
In.
in, right?
Just please, get Torres. No.
Just get Torres. And you know what, DVR, you're right. I mean, you're right. The fact that Yankee fans can be frustrated, but it's tough to watch. Like, they're just not fun to watch play baseball.
That's the same problem that so many other teams are having league-wide, though. I feel like...
Mm-hmm. So stipulated. I completely agree.
It's the same complaint that like 25 other fan bases have right now.
Which is why they're talking about the sticky stuff on the baseball, because I think that that's a big part of it. You know, I would advocate actually to get rid of the shift in some way. I really would. I would say you have to have two guys on either side of the either side of second base, because I think that that would open the game up a little bit more. I think it's really hard. You've got guys, lefties, who are just hitting into the shift on a constant basis. It's just not fun. I mean, that's why Mark Teixeira just quit.
Yeah, but shame on him. Just hit the ball the other way. Give me a break.
Well, yeah.
Give me a break.
Apparently, it's pretty hard to do. We do have a hard out because our guest has a 12 o'clock, which we have to respect. But real quick, let's just finish. Ross Stripling, by the way. DVR, you still don't believe?
I am still not sold based on some of the underlying numbers. The curveball has always been good. I don't think he really has anything else to put with it. So I'm skeptical. I think he's very, very matchup dependent.
Glenn, Ross Stripling.
So I read, I can't remember where I read this, but I read that there was a fear that he was tipping his pitches. So I'd like to see what the next couple of starts look like. Last one was okay.
It was against Houston, though.
But, you know, if he was tipping and you see a big increase in performance over the next couple of weeks, then maybe
I'm always holding out hope on that curveball. And then I do want to talk about the BABIP, but maybe we'll wait for Ariel Cohen to join us as a guest. And he'll be here to tell you why BABIP actually really matters. I just had to throw that in there. last night on the phone, I was talking to DVR, and you know, DVR lives in Wisconsin, and the best pastry from Wisconsin is something called the Kringle. DVR, you want to tell everybody what the Kringle is?
It's like a flaky ring with a filling, and it's got a nice little frosting on it. So it's kind of like maybe like a Danish, but thinner in the shape,
yes,
of a ring. That's the best way to describe it.
My son's in the car because I called Glenn this morning just to make sure my kids were in the car, and they were trying to describe it, and they were saying it was like a donut. I was like, it's not a donut. It doesn't have like the dough around the nut. It's just, it's very thin. But what did you say? Because I said, DVR, are you going to send me some Kringle?
Yeah, your son said it was sort of like a flat jelly donut. And I said, it sort of seems like what, you know, the jelly donut equivalent of matzah for Jewish people, the unleavened jelly donut.
It's like an unleavened jelly donut. It's a high quality experience. So I asked DVR, are you going to send me some Kringle? I need some Kringle, you know? And DVR is like, tell everybody what you told me, which is true, which is where I found the Kringle for the first time, and everyone should get a Kringle. DVR, tell them.
Yeah, if you're in New York, Trader Joe's actually stocks the O&H Kringles that I get when I'm near Milwaukee, so I don't have to send you one, Ian. You can actually get them at your local Trader Joe's, at least for now.
For the last couple of years, I've been having the Kringle. So I had this Kringle, and I'm like, this is like the best tasting Kringle of all time. So I'm like, DVR, can you get me like the authentic Kringle? And he's like, yeah, that's the one you've got at Trader Joe's. So go to Trader Joe's. And last question, I got to ask Glenn, have you seen the movie Midnight Run?
Of course.
What do you think of the movie Midnight Run?
I think I want to get invited to the viewing party that I've been hearing about as a loyal listener for years.
DVR, have you watched it yet on HBO Max? Because it's still on HBO Max. You had the vacation.
I had work to do. I had farm type work to do on a smaller property.
Okay, I guess that's good. All right, so to wrap us up, for the man who has been rooting for a team that has never won a World Series and is still mad about it, Derek Van Riper.
Fact.
For the man who forgot to cancel his grass cutting appointment for today, Glenn Colton.
That was my neighbor.
I'm Ian Kahn for Fernando DeFino. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time with good talk. Bye.
Hey,
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.